Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
I'm Amira.
I'm JW.
And first, we got to start off with a couple reviews we had. We had a really bad review on iTunes.
What?
Somebody did not like our queer theology episode. They said to...
Imagine that.
Yeah.
Gasp.
Right. The one episode that I knew people wouldn't like and we got a bad review, but it was a one-star review. They took all the stars.
It was so anticlimactic.
It was like you lost me on this queer theology. Like, if we lost you, we lost 4 stars on whatever. I was like, all right, fine. The point was basically, you know.
Y'all tried it.
Yeah.
Hey, man, look, it's feedback, okay?
It's feedback. We take all the feedback.
We've said it from the beginning, we'll take it all.
I think the general idea is that they wanted somebody presenting the other side of the argument, the traditional church side of the argument. And that was something that was intentional on our part, where churches have been dangerous for LGBTQ folks for so long.
Mm-hmm.
That conversation needed to be a safe space to actually have that conversation without. We've all heard the other church side of the argument. We don't need to hear that 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to actually have a conversation to expose the idea of this is actually happening within Christianity. This stream of thought is being explored within Christianity. And as we do on Faith Uncut, we try to expose people to things that are going on that you may not know about. And so that's not always the time and place, especially with the community that we've done harm to. For so long, we didn't want to reintroduce something that horse has been beaten.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we do appreciate the feedback, but that was an intentional decision on our part to make sure that we did not continue to further the harm that we believe should not even been in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So we also got a positive review on the Facebook page from Shannon LeGrand. We appreciate that. It was a 5-star review, so we got some stars back.
Thanks, girl.
So if you digging the show, if you're not digging the show, make your voice heard. You know, if you don't like that we got a 1-star review, balance it out with a 5-star review.
Appreciate.
Help our grade point average, would you?
And as always, we still have Patreon if you want to donate and help us. We've upgraded some of this audio equipment, which is hopefully giving you a little bit better sound. I know I sound better to me. So anyway, this is the shit show. You saw that when you clicked on it. Because emotions are kind of raw. We're recording this on Wednesday, and this is the day that Justice Kennedy announced his retirement from the Supreme Court. So we're going to talk about a few things that have been on our hearts and minds.
Recently.
Yes.
Okay. I don't think we're fortune tellers. I think that we're just in the moment and we're aware. And I think we've been, you know, very fortunate to get our timing correct on bringing up some things on the podcast. I think we've been timely with the discussions around matters of civics, matters of community and politics, and how these things intersect. And I just think that people just need to understand that we are living through an era that will be reviewed repeatedly in the future for all of the different policy shifts and geopolitical shifts that are taking place. And like, we don't want to steer the conversation toward too cut and dry on a political scale, or like we're some type of news journalist or whatever, but it's like, take a time out, for real. Like, time out. There's a lot of things changing. There's a lot of pushback politically and policy wise, and I think we just need to take a moment to to just follow where the ball is going. So as of today, we're not only, you know, considering the news that this administration will have the opportunity to name another Supreme Court justice. There's going to be implications behind that. But recently, we've had to deal with a 24-hour news cycle that has been really disheartening to take in regarding immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess just my vantage point is that we are on a path that we really need to just take a moment and acknowledge, you know, what is the reality of what's taking place in such a, it seems so fast.
Yeah, this last 8 to 12 days has been the unraveling of civil liberties at a scale I had not seen.
Yeah, it's been really fast. The immigration stuff. Where are we gonna cut this cake? Full of shit.
It's the shit show.
It
so
is the
we're
shit
not,
show.
This, we're not just holding back.
Just right there in the middle. So, right? So we have literal children
being trafficked again.
Yeah, like we're talking straight separation. Now, not that this is a new thing for the U.S. or in general in the world, but here we go again.
Yeah,
is my first point. Here we go again with the kind of this separation.
The foundation of the criticism is that one child is too many. So, you know, because I've watched people become desensitized to war because we don't lose as many people. You understand what I mean? So it's like the Iraq conflict and Afghanistan is very disheartening when you see, oh, you know, you lost service members. But when they put the totals up, I don't even think it's been 10,000 people compared to a World War One that took out hundreds of thousands of people. So you kind of get, you know, desensitized, your perspective changes. So from the attitude that one child is too many, to have almost 2,500 kids separated from their parents, considered tender age, who did not approach, you know, our borders by themselves. So there is a mother or a father or an adult guardian who has been incarcerated for the crime of crossing the border. The child that was with them has been separated from them and sometimes shipped anywhere across the country with hardly any follow-up paperwork, no plan, no process, it seems to be. And the amount of stress that has kind of brought up for me, it has been hard to contend with, because the first thing I said is that it's happening again.
Yeah.
And unlike, you know, sometimes things don't come to life when you read them, when they happened in a, you know, what you think is a far off time, you know, 200 years ago, you know, overseas or something, you know, space and time make things feel like they're farther apart. We haven't dealt with the ramifications of when the state separates children from parents ever.
Right. I want to back up one step and then come back to this point. So one of the things that I'm hearing from the administration is the following. The reason we have this issue at the border, it's not because we, the administration and the country, don't want these folks to come across the border. No, the issue is what we want is we want the good people to come. We don't want the bad people to come. Now, that in and of itself pushes out not even implicitly, but explicitly, that's saying this is an elitist type thing, right? Mm-hmm. So if that position had been taken from the beginning, then there's a whole bunch of folks from the majority, as in the white culture, who wouldn't be here today, right? If all it was about was the elitist nature and we're only going to take the cream of the crop. So the policy embedded in that policy is, no. We don't have an issue with people coming to this country, but see, we want the best of the best. So this policy is in effect to prevent the low of the low from coming. Now, I can already, we can call BS on that. I don't want to stay there. I don't want to stay there. But here's what I really want to do. Because that's in the policy. Mm-hmm. Now we have people at the border, families at the border, right? And so the justification is, well, you're not coming in the right way. Here's the problem. The right way to get into the country is still a process. It's not like there's somebody there saying, these are the rules, these are the processes, these are the steps. Because I can guarantee you, if we made it a bit easier, then people would follow the process, right? I've heard all of the arguments from, you need a social security number, you need to understand, you need to come get a job, you need to do all of this. Nobody's arguing that's trying to get to this country. Mm-hmm. Nobody's arguing. Because understand the hell you had to go through.
To even get to the border?
Hello? Just to get to the border and then to go across it. Now you come across and your children are now ripped from you.
So to clarify, traditionally immigration does filter who comes through those borders. So for instance, if you try to immigrate to Canada, they will score you on a point system. That point system takes into account education level, job experience, age. And so they total those elements up. And what they're also trying to do is filter out who can come through. And they also want the best. And that's not atypical. What's different about this case is that doesn't usually apply to refugees, which is what we're seeing a lot of. So you, in a refugee situation, because of the agreements that these nations have, you can come here. And then also, yeah, we are calling bullshit on that because there aren't just border crossings to the south. There are border crossings to the north. Right. And we don't see.
There are people here who come here for what is supposed to be short amounts of time, who overstay visas and who are able to just continue to live here. There's not an intention to leave. But I am concerned about not just the manifestation of the action. So what it looks like by the time it hits the news. I'm concerned about the policies. This is the same leader of this particular administration who has used his personal opinion to interrupt private commerce, private affairs. So one of the industries that he butted in happened to be the NFL. The NFL comes back with this jackleg policy about not protesting. We kind of touched on that previously. But one of the things that he said the next day was, if you want to be on your knee, maybe you shouldn't be in our country. Birthright citizenship is not something that the United States always had. A lot of people, if you don't question where your rights really came from, then you don't know when they were written into the plan for what was probably your demographic. So we have to recognize, and one thing that I think eludes a lot of people is that you're fucking poor on paper. You know what I mean? So it would be intellectually lazy to have a conversation like this and just focus it on race or focus it on, you know, your immigration status. Some of this has to do with class, and it has to do with the amalgamation of different systems that come across as what is this American culture? So this is this capitalist Christian culture where your capitalist actions are obscured by the ideas of, and values of democracy or Christianity. But when you peel those layers back, you're looking at really, really deft policy that seeks to continue the subjugation of a larger demographic, those who do not have, under the power of those who do. So right now we're seeing it manifesting with immigration. But when somebody is kind of hinting at you that they're trying to change your citizenship status, he's not just talking to the people approaching the border. He's testing it on the people who were first written into the document. So this isn't just a con. You know, sometimes people sit back from the table because maybe they feel like they don't have a dog in that fight. But you might not know that the Afro-Caribbean family that's your neighbor might have somebody who's undocumented because they overstayed their documents. Right. So you might not think you have a dog in the fight, but eventually you might find that you do. And if you find that you do and you've been sitting on the sideline all this time, you might not feel like you're really ready to engage and to support. One of the classic examples is like people who have an opinion about Cuban immigrants who had been welcomed to be here. Wet foot, dry foot policy. Why didn't that extend to Haitians? You really get rooted and you realize it's going to be a whole lot of policies, immigration policies to the larger, let's say the larger economy in the area. Oh, you can come here and work. Oh, you can come here and live, but you can't. That's not based in Haiti recent. That is the outcome of hundreds of years of policy toward that nation. That's why you don't have that with Jamaica. That's why you don't have that with certain nations, not because of who they are now, but who they were then. So when I think about the fact that we are dealing with somebody who's being advised on policies by someone who is trying to dissect the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment to some extent. When you go at voting, ultimately you're going at the 15th. When you go at lack of equal protection before the law, you're going at the 14th. When you incarcerate people, you are stripping them of that liberty. You're going at the 13th. The 13th ends slavery except for when you are incarcerated.
I want to talk about this experience that I wrote about on the faithuncut.com website, where I had admittedly my own naivete about trying to see what I can do, whatever I can do to help these children. Mm-hmm. All right. So last week I'm talking to my wife and we're like, yo, I want to do something. Like I want to, these kids shouldn't be locked up in these detention centers. Sad. And so I was like, I wonder if there's an organization actually placing children so that they aren't in detention centers, maybe in a foster situation or whatever. So I started looking around and I found an organization right up the road here in Maryland that does this. And so I called them, and should I name names? I don't know. I can. So I called them.
We'll have a follow up show and we're letting shit go. Okay. We're letting shit go.
So I called the name is on the faithuncut.com mm-hmm. website, so go there and check it out. But I called this organization and I'm just getting information. And so they tell me, you know, yeah, we place them with licensed foster care families in the state. And what you do is it's usually like anywhere from 2 weeks to 3 months. And we assign the child a caseworker who's trying to locate a family member who is also within the United States to place them with long term while they still work out this thing. In the meantime, they'll go to school during the day. You know, they get out at 3 o'clock and they stay with you in the evenings through the weekends. And so I'm listening to this saying it sounds like they're helping, but I'm not, you know, quite sure what's going on here. And then I also started to ask myself some questions about, well, how do they get these children? Like, who is the U.S. releasing these children to? Mm-hmm. So I started to look into the organization. It turns out this is one of many organizations around the country who provide adoption services to the U.S. government for detained children. And so the disgusting part of this is the Office of Refugee Resettlement partners with these organizations to place these kids, these refugee children. And in 2017, that office, ORR, lost 1,450 kids. Lost 1,450 kids. And so as I'm digging into this company, I'm like, all right, so who's backing them? You know, where did they come from? Turns out Betsy DeVos and her husband Jack and Betsy DeVos, their foundation paid them in 2015 a large amount as they were trying to lobby an act that would help organizations like this deny LGBTQ families adoption rights. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, the more I dig into this, the more horrified I am, because now I'm putting the pieces together and I'm saying the U.S. government has partnerships with these adoption agencies that have been documented to lose children in their system. Mm-hmm. And they're placing children who they do not provide any paperwork for, either the parents or the child.
Disappearing these children
are disappearing. So I dig further back and this became in 2009, there was an evangelical movement to push for adoptions. This was bolstered in 2010 with the earthquake in Haiti. And then you start to see Christians in the U.S. starting to adopt these kids. Mm-hmm. And the adoption agencies are getting paid large sums of money for this. So this particular agency gets anywhere between $25,000 and $40,000 per child in adoption fees. And so they lobby to have more children placed.
You look so troubled.
I'm not troubled. Let me tell you why I'm not troubled. Because, so here's a story that is actually real. This same particular organization mm-hmm. that you're referencing, mm-hmm. my wife and I, several years back, when we were considering adoption, were looking at this particular agency and a few others mm-hmm. that were across the country. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came up was, what ethnicity are you looking for specifically, right? And so we was like, well, we're Black. So I was kind of thinking we would start with Black. And then while we were in this discussion, we then started talking about children from other countries. Mm-hmm. So I saw the fees associated. Mm-hmm. And one agency mm-hmm. charges you fees based on how much you make. Mm. So the more you make, then the more they charge. Even though these same tests and all these things you're talking about mm-hmm. cost the same thing. When you dig deeper, then you go, oh, okay, so this may be like a buddy of mine in the Midwest. They adopted a child from China, but that child was legitimately in China. And it was a lot of fees associated right. with the traveling back and forth. Some of these fees that we were being charged, it was as if the child was in a different country. No, this child was here mm-hmm. in Annapolis or Baltimore or somewhere. Mm. But yet we were still going to be charged $45,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you start to go,
yeah, that's huge business.
$45,000. Like, that's huge what, business. Why is this happening? So let me tell you this real quick. Around the time that we're thinking through this, this is years ago, Don Cheadle is on Good Morning America. And this was around the time when you had, it was like popular in white culture to adopt kids somewhere from some African nation, like it was popular. So Don Cheadle was making a joke, and he said it so flippantly. That thing was funny, and it cut. And my wife and I went, ooh, that hurt. So Don Cheadle goes, yeah, well, you know. And he was serious as a mug. He's like, yeah, because my wife and I, you know, we're really looking at this adoption thing. And I think it was Diane Sawyer. She went, really? Like international adoption? Or what are you thinking? No. We're going to flip the script. We're just going to go get some rich white kid's baby and just pull them over into our house.
Brilliant. Mm.
And then we're going to see what y'all do. Brilliant. And when he did it, like, everybody laughed in the studio except Diane, because she went, I don't even know how to feel about that. Mm-hmm. I say all that to say this issue has been happening for years, right? And right now, just in the last few days, there was a story that I think it was my wife and I were looking at the news, and they talked about this one young girl, family gets to the border, young girl gets separated from the family. She ends up in Phoenix, or just outside of Phoenix. And she's from Ecuador, ends up in a foster family through one of these same services. And the foster family is like, well, you know, they want to help. Like, they are genuinely trying to help. Mm-hmm. So the foster family talks to the young girl. She says in her native language, I have one phone number. They look it up, call the number. They get to the family in Ecuador. The family in Ecuador says, yes, that's our girl. That's our blood. They say, great. We're going to tell the caseworker and tell the government that they need to go ahead and release her back to Ecuador. At least she can be with her family. Mm-hmm. And the government says, slow your roll. We're not doing that.
So you have...
like, that's the end of it.
Wow.
This baby is now in Phoenix. There's no telling where her mom and her dad are.
If you're deporting the parents. So, you know, because we can stay there and we can dig deep right there. One of the things that has been a byproduct of this happening, and this happening on such a large scale and being amplified and being in the media, whatever, is that now you have contemporary critique where physicians, you know, therapists, psychologists, pediatricians, theologians, people are commenting about the trauma and about the irreversible damage that could be done behind separating a child from their parent. So, you know, not a child that's 17 and 9 months and thinking that they already there. We're talking about 5-6-year-olds. Think about how you would feel walking through the store and you lost sight of your 6-year-old, or a security guard, you were shoplifting. They're like, well, I'm gonna take your daughter. Okay. I'm gonna take your kid because you were shoplifting and you're going to jail. I'm not even gonna give you the opportunity, really. You know what? Tell me who you want me to call and I'm gonna call them. They gonna come get the child, but I'll never tell you. I'll never tell you what the outcome was. When I tell you this practice, it's triggering to me because this is a situation that happened thousands of times across generations to a group of people here who are being told that it shouldn't matter today, right? Who some people think they're helping when they say, don't look at, you know, what happened in the past, focus on the future. And now, because you don't even realize what, and you don't know what a sale looks like. So when you read, so what you were digging deep, Mike, and you figured out, am I looking at a transaction? Imagine if it wasn't that deep. Once upon a time, it used to happen out in front of everybody. She's for sale, and so is the baby. So is the toddler. So is the 7-year-old. And they don't have to go to the same place. Matter of fact, we prefer it that way.
So we're still feeling the effects. So I am black in this country. And when I, let's say, attempt to trace my genealogy, my genealogy terminates in 1812 on a slave registry. That informs me that I do not know where I fit in this world because you can only go. Now, that's over 200 years ago. It's 206 years ago. But I still feel the effects of that now. We're seeing generations of whole family lines cut off now at this border by border patrol.
Artificially.
Okay, so I'm going to give you this story. So for me, and this is why it's triggering for me. About a month ago, me, my wife, and my boys, we were going on this trip. We were going into like some part of like Southern Virginia. And we were going there and we were going for like this beach house, right? We're going with a group of people, huge house. As we're driving, the navigation takes us through some just dark backwoods places where I can feel my anxiety increasing because now I'm going back to childhood, and I'm like, but now I'm the adult. I'm the father. I got to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cool. Nothing happened. But in that moment, all of the thoughts came flooding back. When we get to the house, in the house, it is a mixed race house. So there are some of the white people in the house, and they look, and they're like, wow, y'all look like y'all have been through a time. Like, are you okay?
Why are y'all so stressed?
And I said, go on, sit down. Let's go ahead and have this discussion now. So I told him, when I was about 5 or 6 years old, we went through some streets just like that. Mm. It was me, my mother, and I think my brother and sister were there. I don't remember. But something happened to the car. Car breaks down. My father has to go walking through a very dark town. Mm-hmm. My dad comes back, gets up to the car, goes to the front window by my mother, and he says, taps on it. She rolls the window down. And she said, yeah. He's like, I found help. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if they really want to help us or not.
Mm-hmm.
So y'all going to stay in the car. And he looks in the back seat and he says, get low. He looks at my mother and he's like, we're going to be fine. But if something goes down, you got to protect the children. So he goes back. He's now dealing with these guys, and they actually are trying to help. But when he walked away, my mother rolls up the window as tight as she can, tells everybody, check all your windows, lock your doors. Mm. And then she's like, now get down and stay in the floor. And I'm like, stay in the floor? But this is help. They're here for us. She's like, we don't know that yet.
Right.
Stay in the floor. Because what I don't want to happen is if they act stupid and attack your father, I'm going to have to get out and help. When I get out and help, the danger is they could take y'all away from us. And I remember going, like, I couldn't process it. I didn't understand. But here's my point. That was at 5. Y'all, I'm 41. The story I told you about going into Southern Virginia happened when I'm 41.
Yeah.
It came back. If you want to talk about the trauma, all I'm saying is these same babies. Mm. This trauma, it's there. See, I didn't get separated. Mm-hmm. It was the thought that I could get separated.
Right.
When I later at 5, 6 said to my mother, when we got to where we were going in North Carolina, it's like, why were you tripping? Like, what happened? Like, it couldn't have been that serious. My mother looks at me and she says, here's what you don't know, boy. See, when I was your age, people were still getting separated. Slavery had been long gone, but kids were still getting separated.
Mm-hmm.
See, the moment you would do something and the sheriff came, there go your parents. And then there you go into a system.
So we have a personal connection to this trauma. But I mean, even if you don't have that backstory, if you've, for whatever reason, your child didn't know where you were in the grocery store for 5 minutes,
you would be shook.
Yeah.
So not only have you been thrust into a prosecution situation where there is a significant language barrier, and on purpose, you are not being given the resources that would level the playing field even a little bit more for you. But on top of whatever you're feeling and whatever you're facing, your young child has been separated from you. Now, I just do not support the glorification of America. I think that America, as just a person who was born here, my whole life has been here. On purpose, I look for, you know, where are we different? Because I think there's honor in knowing what the differences are and being getting to a point of respect. I don't have to adapt or assimilate. I'm glad to be alive in this time where we're continuing to center ourselves and talk about ourselves. But I think one thing that's been elusive for African Americans is this idea of restoration. You know, something has happened. Has it really been forgiven? Has it been, has the offense really been restored?
Right.
Now this thing is happening, and what people are cranking out without even really thinking about it is you're cranking out all of the data and all of the evidence of trauma that we said applies, but you're cranking it out for this situation. I'm happy to see it because I'm like, now change the dates. Change the dates and know that it lasts for generations. Change the dates and know that there are families that are still reeling. You know, when people talk about, why do you give your kids the talk? Why do you tell them how to interact with the police?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you tell them certain things? Because that is how you have you've preserved your life. Across generations, you've learned lessons. They did this. Don't do this. You know, we won't do that. This is how you behave. We've learned that because we are coping with the trauma. What are these kids going to tell their children about people in uniform? what are they going to tell their kids about what it means to come to America?
They're going to tell them, get low in the back seat. They're not here to help.
It's so, just crazy.
So MSNBC the other day, I think it was on Rachel Maddow, I think, they play this clip of...
Is this when she was crying?
I think this was like a night after, because this was actually the video. They showed video from from one of these like detention centers. Yeah, and it was a young girl in there named Jessica.
Yep.
And the worker who ended up resigning. Mm-hmm. Like, you watched this
the
video.
Man?
That was a woman.
It was a woman.
Oh, I saw that one. Okay.
Like that one. Yeah, that thing just like, that thing tore me apart. Watching this baby who is beyond tears.
It is right?
Like, she can't even cry.
Right.
And just to watch her at this moment. And here's the thing, y'all. I think it was at the end of last week, Trump signs, air quotes right now, signs an executive order. Why in the hell do you have to do an executive order for some stuff you made up? That's because you like the show. But
y'all's president is full of shit.
But here's what he does, though. Signs it, right? Now, you said this earlier, Amira. What follow-through thought? What plan is there after the signature? It's not like we signed something and then went, here is the 45-page briefing on how we are going to restore. No, all we said was, we will stop. And again, air quotes.
No.
We said we'll stop.
But it's just like following up. Like, when we say that this last, let's say, 14 days has been a fucking grind, like, we're still reeling from a person who did a fucking photo op with somebody over nuclear denuclearization of North Korea. Like we couldn't even get into that real good because the border started getting hot. You see what I mean? But like, when we look at that, and I'm watching something, and I'm saying, so when are y'all gonna get concerned? One thing that has come up constantly, even as we talk about, you know, so what should our response be as people of faith to, you know, when we see all this foolishness going on? And I do think that some people have become more active. They've become more aware. You can't become active until you become aware. I'm watching people discuss immigration on a thoughtful level who probably had never thought about it before. You know, here in this area, people are talking about it because we can actively see how a area that voted one way didn't see how the tail of the snake was going to come back and lick them, you know. So we have whole counties on the Eastern Shore that are suffering in their businesses because you voted about something without understanding how the situation really impacts you. So you voted for a person who destabilized how you do business.
Migrants are your workforce.
They are your workforce. Yeah. And they're your workforce, not because the jobs are not available to Americans, but because you are an American company that, to meet your bottom line and to make profits for the people who are already a part of the company, you cut corners in your labor costs. Let's call it what it is. So when you cut corners in your labor costs, you know what? You probably can't get somebody who has to pay market rent for, you know, where they live, sure, and for their medicines and for American cost of living to come work for you for what really translates into migrant wages. So then you get upset because you're like, oh my God, I cannot get my visas. I have no visas for my fucking crab meat pickers. But you voted for it straight like that. So you cannot sit here and be like, I don't understand why I'm not making any money today, when you literally voted to be broke. Literally. People are feigning, you know, just really faking this compassion. Oh my, it's so terrible. If I find out you voted for this man, what are you feeling? What part of this did you not see coming? We already said it starts with language. Soon as somebody says to you, not after they became president, it was before.
Mm-hmm.
They're bringing rapists, murderers, MS-13. He got MS-13 in his mouth like they love us. It's crazy. But you're getting away with that. You're changing the language by which other people recognize other humans. And people are playing this game. What should the response of people of faith be? Are you off the sidelines yet? Do you realize that there might not be a barrier? Whatever barrier you think exists between the people you see it happening to and you don't exist.
As a person of faith, and this is despicable, I'm trying to put myself in their position. Like, how would they view this? Are they still on board saying this is the Christian savior of the United States? And when you got children being separated and then everyone's up in arms, even Christian leaders are coming up and saying, no, this is not the right thing. And then on the heels of that, you get what equates to a Muslim ban. And I can just feel
so many Christians being like, yo, there we go. That's what we voted for. Like, that's where we are.
The truth of the matter is there is a large group of people who are active in the American electorate who feel like they got exactly what they voted for. Mm-hmm. They voted for these Supreme Court seats. Mm-hmm. They voted for the stacking of the federal bench. Like, they voted for what they're getting out. They voted for them tax cuts. Mm-hmm. Okay. They voted for terrible leadership over the Department of Education. That's what they wanted. Did it have to be her? Not necessarily, but it's like, that's the devil you ended up picking. It could have been somebody else. And it's like, why did you choose that person? But we don't even talk about, because again, we get bombarded with stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff. When's the last time the media say anything about Trump University and the scandal and the fraud ever since he was allowed to settle for what, $25 million?
There's no time to go back that far. We're still trying to figure out what happened last week.
So that's what I'm saying. Like, it's an onslaught at this point. But that, I think that's the reason why we're taking the time to say time out. Listen, you know, make sure you're clocking in. Clock into the fact that, yes, today we got the Kennedy news. We're dealing with the immigration stuff. But today the Supreme Court dealt a major blow to labor unions. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So labor unions, like, what is going on? OK, like, I should just teach history, because this is just crazy. If you knew what the United States looked like in the 1920s, you would not be gleeful right now. If you knew what the shit looked like in 1927, you'd be like, hold up.
Yeah, when those protections go away.
Yeah.
And recently, this court used a case from 1925 that had already been upended in 1935. They used it to move a verdict toward an employer's benefit. What happened today directly affects what goes on in November. And we know we need to show up for the midterms, but like, we're trying to show this greater, bigger picture. They're not just deciding things out of the blue and just say, well, hey, we're going to take this case.
No, Supreme Court cases are chosen. This, it's not like you have a case at the district level and then you lose it. So you go to the appeals level and then you lose it and then you go to the Supreme Court. They are very selective about what they choose. Yep. And the cases that go up there have been sought out from. It's almost like a, think about like an American Idol process where, mm-hmm, you're looking for the best case to ask the right question of the court to get the verdict that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So that's exactly what happened in this case with the labor unions and also
the Baker case.
Uh-huh. Right. Also with the affirmative action case at the university, mm-hmm, where they looked for
the Harvard case.
Yeah, the Harvard case. Mm-hmm. An Asian recipient who felt discriminated against. Yep. And so that, using that to try to overturn some of the affirmative action progress that everything that happens at the Supreme Court level is intentional, and unfortunately, there's nothing beyond that from a judiciary standpoint.
But let me tell you something, man. This will sound like I'm being silly. Partly I am. Mm-hmm. I am going to sign up to be a part of the Ruth Ginsburg security detail. I'm finna go get high blood pressure medication.
She can't leave.
Listen to me, man. I'm getting medication.
I'm talking about.
I'm helping with. Listen, I will help with bathing. Oh my God. I'm getting the grandkids gifts. Whatever I got to do to help her, yeah, stay there.
That is good.
Because I'm serious. I'm saying, listen.
RBG watch. Yeah.
Right. It's because, yeah, if RBG says
the notorious,
I'm out for whatever reason.
For whatever reason.
Health or whatever. Sure. Y'all. This thing swings even the more.
Not only that, like, it swings even the more, you know, even more. But it's not all doom and gloom, even though it is. It's a lot. And it's important to call that out, because you don't want people to be numb to this information. It's a crushing cycle. It's too much information. So it gets to the point, it's like watching tennis. You just get tired of the ball going back and forth. But you got to pay attention. There are things happening locally that are exciting, that that kind of lend itself to something is crumbling, but something new is being built. So here's an excellent opportunity. You know, here in Maryland, we just did the primaries. We record on Wednesdays. We did the primaries on Tuesday. And before I woke up in the morning, the incumbent governor had issued a statement that Maryland Democrats nominated a liberal activist, Ben Jealous, to be on the Democratic ticket. And I'm like, nobody went to sleep. Like, you concerned about it? Now, we won't deep dive into that particular, you know, race, and, you know, figured out some stuff about county executives in a lot of places and everything else. But the machine is responding to the fact that the people are restless. So it is making a difference. Like, yeah, the governor's pretty popular, but somebody's concerned because you didn't lose any sleep responding to who the ticket was. You see what I'm saying?
Sure.
There was the election of a very progressive candidate in New York. She's getting ready to go to Congress for the first time. She unseated the number four mm-hmm. in Congress, mm-hmm. The number four Democrat in right. Congress, and who's a protege of Nancy Pelosi and this old guard. You know,
was expected to be the next.
Right.
The next,
you know, and now that leader. We speak about Nancy, she tried it because, you know, I stand for Maxine Waters and all things black women. I just be like, yes. Okay, well, I do feel like she's experienced some of that same blowback that we've mentioned that we say happens in different organizations, the misogyny and all of that, but also just the straight up misogyny and the racism. And when it comes to addressing a black woman who's in authority, and Trump has, like, you know, focused his fury on her. And in my heart of hearts, I'm like, but she's time enough for you. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's not going to back down from getting into a verbal altercation mm-hmm. with you. So I'm, you know, that's entertaining. But I'm also, like, very encouraging of that, because politeness, Martin Luther King wrote about, not the extremists that are in your face with it. It's the moderates that look the other way. It's the moderates that don't stop anybody. It's the moderates who don't like your tone, as opposed to the fact that you're fighting for your justice. That's important. Those fights, to me, are looking very dynamic locally. So I don't want people to get so discouraged by what's happening nationally that they disengage, because you can do something.
It's so much. So just to lift it up from political information, right. Boxer George Foreman. As he got older, I mean, he was famous for, you know, the Muhammad Ali fights and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But as he got older, he got bigger as a human, and he still was a productive fighter. But his fighting style had changed. And one of the things that he would do, he would use his size to lean on you throughout the course of the fight.
And make you tired.
Your legs can't hold you up and him up. Mm-hmm. And so the longer that fight went on, the better he pressed his advantage, just by doing nothing but making you carry it. Mm-hmm. Making you carry him. And by the end of the fight, you just weren't strong enough to stand up, and then you get knocked out. And that's kind of what I feel like is happening right now, where it's day after day of these crushing blows, where this platform that is much bigger than us is leaning on us every day. And it's easy for that fatigue to get to your legs. But yeah. This is the time. Like, this is the time to fight. You don't have to hold every story. You don't have to. You could take any of these stories just in the past week and say that is sufficient for me to get in this fight.
Yes.
And ignore all the other stuff, because you don't need to make your mind up more. If your mind is made up, you know, you don't need more information.
Right.
So this is where we are. Like, you pay attention. If you try to follow every ball is hit, you're just mm-hmm. not, you're going to miss everything.
You're going to literally fatigue yourself. You're not going to participate.
See, this is where I really need the church on a couple of levels. Mm-hmm. We talked about earlier, right? What are people of faith? What should we be doing? Mm-hmm. Well, let's deal with corporately first. There's a large segment of the church mm-hmm. who decided that they were going to put all of their capital. They bet the house on Trump. And they bet the house on the fact that this is who we want. This is what we need. He's going to stand for it. And they were very vocal. Mm-hmm. I mean, extremely vocal about their support.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, legitimate mega pastors, major broadcasting networks, major news outlets. Everybody came out vocally for it. What I need to see is who actually believes the whole of the Bible. And who actually now would actually come out vocally and go, this is where I'm going to have to jump ship, right?
So
nobody, I have not seen anybody do that on a macro level. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
I realize how hard it is. I understand the fear. Forget all of that. Because mm-hmm. to me, you're either going to believe the whole biblical story or you're not. You can't pick and choose. I was so pissed to watch Attorney General Sessions take Romans 13 to justify. Woo! I mean, like, so pissed that I literally, like, showed it. My baby boy looked at me and he went, "What's wrong, Dad?" I said, "See that right there?
That's that bullshit.
He just took that scripture. That is not what that meant." Right? No, I didn't really want to do that with my youngest son.
Yeah, that's bullshit, son.
I didn't really want to do that, okay?
Listen, that probably would have been me. My niece would have been my auntie.
Right. But my thing is, I need somebody to stand up on a corporate level.
Yeah.
I need to see the church, to your point. Now, we can't just keep, you can't sit here and go, well, I mean, that's okay that he did that. Right. Because, see, that's all right. But look at what we may get on this side. See, it's okay that he's doing this, but let's look at this. You know what I mean? Like, but this is what I'm saying.
Coretta left us a letter. Don't do that.
Yeah, but this is what
she wrote a whole letter.
This is what I'm saying. The corporate church body isn't doing anything to shift. Mm-hmm. Then, if I can't see it corporately, a part of that is individual. I really want to see, like, local churches and just believers in general start to stand up and to take some action to go, you know what? It was all fun and games up until you started doing this to the children. It was all like, I keep waiting for this moment.
I do feel like you have that. I feel like those stories are occurring where people are saying, this is where I draw the line, but maybe not at a level where it's reached that critical mass where you can really, you can hear that noise or you can see that agitation. But almost immediately, as soon as we were producing better quality of the evidence of what was going on with the children and being separated, you also began to get these examples. So now you have, you know, the leaks, the workers who are doing whatever. You have organizations announcing the ends of their partnerships because, you know, some organizations cannot withstand that media pressure of, you know, even participating. But I feel like people are beginning to speak out, agitate, you know, to say something, to try to separate themselves from this school of thought that says we all have to think the same thing. We all have to, you know, produce or want the same things in policy. But it is just mission critical that you do something. Some people always love to talk about what they would have did. If this was the 60s,
this is the time.
This is
shaping up to
be. This is the 21st century. This and is it's going
you are living
down.
You're living in a time where people are going to look back and say about this time, if I was there, I would have done this.
Yo,
you're here,
and the amount of misinformation that is being intentionally pumped into what you consume every day is just astronomical. You know, our leader currently, you know, you used to be able to critique a president and be like, I don't know if he's being all the way honest, you know, about this. You know, this sounds like a very American position to take, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't always be like, he is lying. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That is a lie. Yo, he's like the worst boyfriend ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, I know I saw you at the show with your homegirl. That was not
me.
My nigga, I spoke to you. You know what I'm saying? Like, dude, I spoke to you. No, you didn't.
Nah,
It wasn't me. And I'm trying to, like, somebody's going to hear this and they're going to laugh because everybody knows that dude.
Yeah.
That is just lying for no reason. Who's already caught and who's like, and I don't care. I said what I said. How? And it is abuse, actually.
You are getting pressed against the wall on the Russia investigation. So your next thought.
So
is
you are
to go
doing any
Putin.
And everything. Like, y'all just missing Manafort in jail. You know what I'm saying? Like he's like, ain't no collusion. All your homeboys are going to jail. They got indictments.
Since y'all mentioned that, that's all I'm gonna tell you. You probably already noticed, right? This is no inside baseball speak. Somewhere in the next 7 to 10 days, here comes another indictment or more information that will come from the Mueller camp. It's not like he doesn't know that. So to your point, right? to your point, Mike, this is all that's happening, right? Okay, the Russia thing is happening. All right, so I tell you what, let me go ahead over here to North Korea. Go ahead and do this.
Didn't he go over there to take some pictures, take some selfies?
Wait. But that wasn't the whole plan. That was layer one. Here was layer two. Now I'm going to double down on immigration, right?
Yo.
This way, when something comes out.
He got way more than he thought he was going to get.
When something comes out from the Mueller camp, another piece of information against my daughter,
right,
my son-in-law, whomever, I'm still covered because, see, I had that good press.
Right.
Because to him, it's good press. But see, that's my point. The only way that I cannot lose hope is because I'm like, okay, something good's going to come out of this. And what I need is...
What are you trying to cover up?
Right? Something good's going to come out of this. And what I need is I need people of faith. Mm. Not just be strong, but we got to do some things.
Yes.
There's work to be done now.
Flip the table.
This is hands to the plow territory. You got primaries coming up. These primaries matter.
Yeah.
We had a show specifically about the federal courts because all of this stuff is important, and we're seeing how important this is. Not like we told you so, like you could have done something between that show and now.
No.
But you could have voted. You could definitely research these candidates. Right. This is the general election coming up in November.
Here we go. We've already gone through in so many shows different things, different activities of what you could be doing to have your hands on the plow. Okay. You can get into it and try to do something for these children who've been separated. You can go volunteer to help register people to vote. You can volunteer to help drive people to polls.
Right.
There is a lot that can be done.
And it's not even acute. It's not even all the stuff that's just going on this week. You can do some of the stuff that you've been thinking about doing. That you haven't done, that needs to be done. You understand what I'm saying? Like, you could do some of those things too.
Okay, here we go. Listen, it's the summertime, right? Kids still need clothes. People still need backpacks. People still need books. People still need library cards. I can do this all day. There are a lot of things that
we
can
be doing
at this moment.
And remembering
to
community
ensure,
is part of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yep. That is exactly right.
Remembering community is going to be a big part how we navigate these next few challenges, because you can't forget how, you know, this is a very individualistic society. You know, what I have is what I have. I want more. There's a commercial out right now that is this guy, and it's supposed to be his inner thoughts. And it's talking about how he likes everybody in the room. And the commercial is about investing. And the narrator says, but you like everybody if you made more money than them. And I said, this is like, this is crazy. But that is the antithesis of the type of behavior and attitude that's going to really assist us collectively getting through some of these things. Like, some of the stuff is old school. I was explaining to a friend, I was like, you know, some things have been lost a little bit in the isolation. You know, you don't know everybody on your block. You don't know, you know, who has what resources and who doesn't mind sharing and da-da-da.
Mm-hmm.
And it might seem so extra, you know. People are like, what? You don't need that till you need it, you know? And if you've ever talked to your elders, you know, I have elders that lived through World War II, you know, and you just like, Mary, you're tripping. No, that really happened. So during that time, people had to collaborate. They did things together to ensure that everybody, you know what I'm saying, had some, was okay, whatever. Some of these things are cultural to us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's now's the time for a good time for recall. Just remember.
Taking care of each other.
Yeah, just take care of one another.
I mean, yes, your community matters, because that's the people that's closest to you. If something really went down, those are the people that you're going to have here. Like, if you couldn't communicate outside of your space, that's it. But, like, just try, back to your point, JW, just try. So I tried to help some kids, and I didn't know what I was doing, and I found all this other stuff that made me mad.
But
so
this
it didn't
is
work
helpful.
Out. But it's helpful information.
Yep.
Like, I mean, you could... There's so many things you could do. You got sons, daughters, nephews, nieces turning 18 before November. Get them registered to vote.
You know, when it's time to vote, just like they did in Alabama, we talked about it. People driving people, you know, to the polls, and you're going to encounter. I texted somebody yesterday, like, did you vote? You know, because I happen to remember, he was a former mentee of mine, but I remember that he didn't vote in the previous presidential election. He didn't vote in 2016. So I'm checking on you, you know, and he's like, I ain't do it yet. I was like, but please go do it. You know, I hope you do that. I was at work, but that's something. You know, I care. Go vote. He said, I don't think anything going to change. I said, well, it definitely won't change if you don't try. Vote.
But that's what I'm saying, man. Like, we have to get out of our own little bubble to expand that, to make it about the community. My wife is doing something that I think is great. I mean, it's a lot of legwork to do it. And it seems kind of weird to hear that there's so much legwork, but she's trying to start a neighborhood watch.
There you go.
So all the things that she has to go through to start it, right?
You got to go to the town.
You got to go to the police. Mm-hmm. You got to have at least three people to come to a public meeting to agree and to vote. This is what they want.
Yeah.
So she's literally trying to go door to door to talk to people. And when you get out and talk to your neighbors and all of a sudden they're like, hey, you know, I was thinking about that too, but you know, I just didn't do anything. So on this part of the block, we watch out for each other, you know, so-and-so calls me if she sees something. Mm-hmm. And so my wife is like, but wouldn't that be great if we all did that same thing? They were like, yeah, well, I'm down. Just tell me when. Right. Mm. And so sometimes it just takes somebody who's going to be willing to do that legwork.
Yeah.
And then you get people to come on board. Because, man, if we can get communities back, then that is a big step.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's what I mean.
That's such a huge
There's
step.
There's so it's much huge. Work. To be done.
It is.
Steve Jobs has a story in his biography. It basically, I'm going to sum this up terribly, but the point is, there was a time when he wasn't who he was. He hadn't started Apple. He hadn't done anything. And he's looking around at people who are doing things. And he's like, well, you know, I think I'm at least as smart. Let me try something. And that's how we ended up with what we have today. The phone that I have in my hand is you end up doing something just because you tried it. And maybe there are people more capable than you.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be doing it and you may not be the best person to do it. But if you put in the work, then it'll get done. Yeah. And that's how we do it, whether it's Neighborhood Watch, whether it's registering people to vote or driving people to the polls or just helping people in your community to make sure that they're okay. Please check on your people now, because this is tough. This is draining on a lot of people, especially people who have lived through stuff like this before. You definitely want to be there with them.
Let me tell you something. I try to do the best I can to just like to be an encourager. And I don't mean that in any sort of deep spiritual anything. Mm-hmm. It's just, man, if somebody's looking down, if I'm literally, like, for example, I'm going through the line at Chipotle because my youngest son loves Chipotle. There's a young girl in there who sometimes she just looks so down, right? And I get it, because she's got to work. People got attitudes. People don't know what they want. She's got dreams and things in her life. And so we've hit it off. So when she sees me, she will start looking up and she'll start smiling.
Mm-hmm.
And then if somebody behind me and she stops smiling, I'm like, well, what happened? And then that's enough for her. I watch people and I'm saying, man, we just got to like go back to talking to folks. Like, again, and I'm not trying to belittle or make light of this, even on my job, when I'm there beyond 6 p.m. and the cleaning crew comes through, I got to be honest with y'all, man, these folks are looking a lot more weighed down than they ever have before. Mm. The bulk of the staff of the cleaning crew
bringing that fight right to their door
are literally Hispanic folks who are just. And they, man, look, they working, okay? They're normal people. But to watch the look on their face, I had one young woman I didn't even know and a guy who came by. They barely spoke any English. We just started talking. And I was like, look, why don't y'all come sit down? Oh, they were like, no, sir, we can't sit down in your office. I said, yeah, you can. You can sit down. I go to my refrigerator. I'm like, look, y'all want something to drink? Anytime I'm not here, that refrigerator is open. You're going to come in here anyway. Just open the refrigerator. Take out whatever you want. And the girl looked at me and went, no, sir, we can't do that. I said, yes, you can. You want me to write it down? I tell you what, get your supervisor. I tell the supervisor, anytime these two come by, they can get anything out the refrigerator. So when I'm there, I start taking waters out because it's nothing deep. But what I'm trying to do is to get them to, let's look up, man. Like we in this fight together.
Mm.
But literally in the past 2.5-3 months, they look so down. They don't want to make eye contact. They don't want to say anything. But man, don't do this here. But that's my point. We have to do something, y'all.
Yeah.
Because we got to realize we're going to make it through this. Okay.
Community's going to do it.
Generations have made it. Generations have made it through this and worse. We're going to get through it.
That's the one thing I don't want, because we know the trauma from our history. Yeah. I don't want anyone to go through this.
No.
But we do know we can get through this.
That's it.
So right now it is a shit show. And this is what we have.
Yes. Well, thank you for hanging with us, because we had to get it out.
That's right.
So this is America, but with your help, it does not have to be. For Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
I'm Amira.
I'm JW.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.